Welcome to the best of Register Radio. We bring you this show that aired in the past and you may have missed it. Please stay tuned for the best of Register Radio.
From the National Catholic Register, this is Register Radio, bringing light and clarity to the news and topics that affect your life.
This week on Register Radio, Tim Drake will be talking with Chaldean Catholic Archbishop Bashir Mati Warda of Erbil in Iraq, all about the situation facing Christians in the Middle East. Also on our program today, Dan Burke will conclude part two of his interview with Ann Carey, this time focusing on the very good work being done by members of the Council of Major Superiors of Women Religious. Welcome again to Register Radio. It's a co-production of EWTN and the National Catholic Register. I'm Tom Price, along with Tim Drake, senior writer for the National Catholic Register, and also Dan Burke, executive director of the Register. We'll begin with Tim's interview with Archbishop Warda. He sat down for a phone interview with Tim while he was here in the United States recently.
So first of all, I just want to start with a little bit of history. Now, you grew up in Baghdad, is that correct?
Right.
And you've been Chaldean Catholic your entire life?
Yes, as the rest of the Christian community there, because we don't have Christians who are being converted from Islam. Usually those who are Christians, they are Christians deep in the history. You have the other way. Maybe you have so many Muslims families who are being who've been forced to leave Christianity to become Muslims.
Yeah.
And the history, definitely the history of the region will tell you more about that. We know certain families, big Christian Muslims families, they could tell you that their ancestors were Christians.
And so as far as you know, historically your family has practiced Christianity?
Oh, yes.
Okay. And tell me a little bit about your ordination. When were you ordained a priest?
I've entered the seminary in 1981 when I was 12 years old, and then after finishing the high school, we studied philosophy and theology. I was ordained in 1993, and then I joined the Redemptorist congregation in 1995. I've done my licentiate degree in moral theology. Master's degree in moral theology in Catholic University of Leuven in Belgium. In 1999, I went back to Baghdad, start the mission there with the Redemptorist mission who came from North Belgium province. In 2001, I was asked to be a parish priest of the second largest parish in Iraq, that was St. Elia Parish. At that time, it has over 3,000 Christian families. It's in the southern part of Baghdad. And in the violence, you know, in Baghdad and Mosul started by end of 2004, by August, bombing churches, kidnapping priests, killing, and all of these issues. So this made it very difficult for the seminary, the patriarchal seminary, to stay in Baghdad, because we had a big house for the seminary in Baghdad in Al-Dora district, which became a very violent area. It was too much for them. We had to postpone the beginning of the year for the seminary for 3 months. But during that time, three of the staff of the seminary were kidnapped. And the patriarch asked me to be director of that seminary, and I took the what you call sad and very important decision to move the seminary from Baghdad to the north of Iraq. And we stayed in a low caravan for 1.5 years. Then we moved to a new building. In 2010, I was elected as a bishop of Erbil. It's one of the old dioceses in Iraq, and we have now over 28,000 Chaldeans, around 30,000 Christians living in the area of Erbil, and at the same time I'm the patriarchal administrator for the diocese of Zakhor. That's in another province also in Iraq.
The next question I had was sort of looking at the Arab Spring movement, right? Because in our country, you know, there's the general belief that when we increase popular rule, that we will also increase the freedom of religion. But that doesn't necessarily seem to be the case in some of these countries, such as Egypt or Iraq. And so I'm wondering, how do you see the so-called Arab Spring movement in terms of the ability for Christians to freely worship and to live safely? Has this movement made it more, are Christians more safe or are they less safe?
Well, when you take it in a general theater, theoretically it's right. As a Christians, we flourish in whenever there is a freedom. We would have our own schools, we would have our own colleges, we would have all our own civil services. I mean, yes, we flourish. You could see it in the whole of the world. But the problem is in Middle East, things is not mature, politically mature yet to think of that direction. You have so many extremisms there. You have so many people who were just saying Islam is the solution for so many political and civil issues. So I don't know how that would end by the end of the story. But I could tell you, speaking from Iraq, we are in a very immature political process. We have to get to the dialogue together, and somehow sometimes this is a violent dialogue. That's not an easy one. So you have also the Arab Spring here. Would it be mature enough to hold all people together? I doubt. Theoretically speaking, yes. We get stronger during the time of persecution, and we flourish during the time of peacefulness, but you have to prepare the condition for that.
And there has been a significant reduction in the number of Christians in Iraq since the overthrow of Saddam Hussein, isn't that correct?
Yes.
And why is that?
Well, Christians, churches were targeted, Christian people were kidnapped, Christian people were killed, Christian people were threatened, were forced to move and leave their houses. There is no future among this, what we call, immature political process. The political process there in Iraq is based on family and tribal connections. So it's not, I mean, some of the Americans would say, well, what's going wrong there? Because we've done all what we can do, and there is a constitution, there is election, there is all these, what you call, issues which appears that it should goes okay. But once you don't know that from the inside, that the tribal connection is working there, and you create not a tribal as a family, but also a political tribes. Political tribes. These big parties have turned to be big tribes, which they look for their own interest. And you know, Iraq is a wealthy country. You have a budget of $100 billion this year. And you could imagine there are lots of oil, there are lots of resources there. So, and plus the greediness. So I think there are quite good reasons for Christians to leave, and maybe one or two reasons to tell them to stay.
So where are the Christians going? Are there any safe enclaves for Christians in the Middle East?
Well, north of Iraq, one of the safe places for them. Syria, it was before. Lebanon, now there is an increase of the Christian, Chaldean Christians and Christian of Iraq going there. Turkey, but all those, Jordan, all these countries are what you call waiting countries. Most of the people will not stay there. They wait for their papers to be resolved by the United Nations. 44% of the Iraqi asylum seekers are Christians now, maybe more.
And so the majority of Iraqi Christians is there a particular place that they seem to be going?
Well, wherever there is a place which would speed the process of immigration, they would go for, even if in one of the African countries, I don't know.
But as you indicated, a good number have also settled in Erbil, correct?
In Erbil and in Duhok, and quite few in Sulaymaniyah. Because most of these families, you know, that they look for final settlement in Australia, in Europe, in Canada, in US, in New Zealand, so they go to the neighboring countries. Others who will not be able to make it, poor enough to make it, or they have, I mean, not all the possible means to travel, they would stay in Baghdad and Mosul and Basra. Others will move inside the country, in Erbil, for example, or Duhok.
Tell me, what are three things that you would like Catholics in the United States to know about Catholics in Iraq?
First, that Christianity in Iraq has all around, 2,000 years. It's a very old community there. It's not being converted from Islam. We were there before Islam. In fact, we taught Islam philosophy, and our schools were always the best, even from the 7th and 6th century. So first of all, that we are there since centuries, because we have seen so many Americans, they always say, okay, when you became a Christian, it's something really, of course, because knowing this is very important for us. Second, we've been through a very difficult time, and of course we are grateful to those people who really made a hand of charity and solidarity with us, like so many Catholic agencies. I could just name a few, but there are many, like Missio, Miserio, Church to the Aid to the Church in Need. We would like to leave this path of charity to another path of opportunity. Yes, we are minority, but that's the third one, but minority with the capability of staying and building a good future also for Iraq, not just for us. So I would like to see more of the commitments, commitments from the media, to raise awareness about the Christianity in Iraq, whether financial commitment to help building these schools and hospital or these civil services, just to start. It's not a way of that the Americans would be there always for us. No, it's just to give us a good push, because we've been marginalized by the whole issue. We are not even benefiting from the richness that Iraq has. I know that it would be very unacceptable for a bishop from Iraq, which is a very wealthy country, to ask, for that. But the reality is that we are not benefiting. We have to find our ways, and we need the church in America here to have this awareness about the situation, and also to continue the not just the support, but at least to show that there is a good way to help this community to stay. Because if we leave, it's a big loss. One of the issues, our culture would be gone. I mean, I could see it here when I visited our community in Detroit. I mean, the second and third generation are no longer speaking Surah, for example. They would like to celebrate Mass in English.
All right, thank you so much, Archbishop, for your time.
Thank you. God bless you.
Our thanks also to Chaldean Catholic Archbishop Bashar Mati Warda. When we return, we're going to talk about some of the great work being done by members of the Council of Major Superiors of Women Religious, talking with Ann Carey. This is Register Radio on the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network. Stay with us.
Hello, I'm Michael Warsaw, Chief Executive of EWTN and publisher of the National Catholic Register. We're in a time in history like no other. In our fight for religious freedom and the need for the new evangelization, it's essential to stay connected via the faithful Catholic content delivered by the Register. We've finally been able to help realize Mother Angelica's dream. She always wanted a newspaper as part of EWTN's media apostolate. Why? because there's an important catechetical opportunity at the intersection of faith and culture. Since the 1920s, the Register has been advancing the truth of the Magisterium. This valuable resource will help you to better understand the faith and deepen your relationship with our Lord. Join the growing ranks of Register subscribers today and access the one source of leading voices and opinions concerning the issues that matter most to you.
To start your subscription to the National Catholic Register today, go to EWTN.com and click on the banner for the Register or call 800-854-6316. That's EWTN.com and click on the Register subscription banner or call 800-854-6316.
Welcome back to the best of Register Radio. We bring you this show that aired in the past and you may have missed it. Please stay tuned for the best of Register Radio.
Let's return to Register Radio on EWTN.
And welcome back. Along with Tim Drake and Dan Burke, I'm Tom Price. Dan is here now with part two of his interview with Ann Carey regarding the good work being done by members of the Council of Major Superiors of Women Religious. Dan, last week we talked about the Nuns on the Bus tour along with Ann Carey, and I think it's very important to bring her on for a second week so that we can look at the other side of this issue.
Yeah, absolutely, Tom. There's so much good going on with women religious
sure. In
our country. They're such a profound blessing to the church.
Well, obviously, here at EWTN, which was started by
exactly,
a nun,
yeah.
So we know of the good works firsthand.
No better example, I think, than Mother Angelica. There's so many good things going on. Even in the situation of the LCWR, we're really praying that the Vatican's leadership in helping to bring about positive reform. I mean, human beings, we're always moving backwards towards heaven, and we need help and we need correction and assistance. And there's a very positive aspect of the Vatican's involvement with the LCWR. But Anne, I'd love for you to tell us a bit about what's going on with a different organization, and that is the Council of Major Superiors of Women Religious. Could you tell us a bit about the background of that entity?
Sure. It is similar. It's also a superiors conference for the United States for women religious, and it was approved in the Vatican by the Vatican in 1992. I think, as far as I know, we are the only country that has two superiors conferences for women, and that came about because sisters grew very unhappy with the direction the leadership conference was moving, even as early as 1970. When the leadership conference started talking about changing its bylaws, it opened its membership to leadership sisters as well as the major superiors, and just started moving in this more social justice, non-ecclesial direction that it has taken for the last 40 years. And so a bunch of sisters got together, and they formed sort of ad hoc group called the Consortium Perfectae Caritatis, which was named after the Council, the Vatican II document on religious life called Perfectae Caritatis. And they got together to give each other mutual support because they had dropped out of the leadership conference, most of them, because they were so unhappy with it.
Now, Anne, was this made up of the superiors of religious orders, or
It was both. It was superiors and individual sisters who were unhappy with their own orders. You know, I always hasten to make that point, that the Leadership Conference of Women Religious is 1,500 sisters, and they are leaders of orders that make up about 80% of the sisters in the country. But that doesn't mean those 80% of sisters in the country agree with their leadership or with the LCWR. In fact, I talk to sisters all the time who are in LCWR communities, but they don't agree with what the LCWR is doing. So it's important to make that distinction.
Yeah, there's a Sister Mary Rose Reddy, who is part of the Daughters of Mary, Mother of Healing Love, recently made a public statement. She said she'd been a professed religious sister for more than 29 years, and that she completely welcomes the assessment of the LCWR and are looking forward to the reforms. And I thought that was a great thing for them to stand up and say, yeah, please come and help us.
Absolutely. And, you know, I talk to sisters all the time from LCWR communities who say the same thing. It's just that they're afraid to speak out because of repercussions. But anyway, back to the original story. So these sisters who were unhappy with the LCWR kind of got together and they started meeting to study the documents of Vatican II. And eventually the Pope appointed Cardinal Hickey of Washington, D.C. at the time as a liaison between the Vatican and sisters who were not affiliated with the LCWR because, you know, they didn't have an official liaison if they weren't affiliated with LCWR. And about that same time, the Institute on Religious Life, which is a lay-run organization over in Chicago, established a forum of major superiors to help women religious who were, you know, disaffiliated with the LCWR. So that forum got together with this consortium, and they started talking with each other. And they were asked then by Cardinal Hickey to dialogue with the LCWR to try to smooth over their differences. And they spent about a year and a half having these dialogues. And at the end of that time, Cardinal Hickey and the Vatican concluded that their ecclesiologies were so different, there was going to be no bringing them together. And so the consortium and the forum sisters decided that it would be better if they dissolved and asked Rome to just appoint a new, set up a new superiors group. And so in 1992, Rome approved this new council.
This is Dan Burke, and I'm with Ann Carey, the author of Sisters in Crisis, an expert on the status of and the history of women religious communities, particularly in America. And we're talking today about a very positive developments with the LCWR, and then also a wonderful group of women religious who set up the Council of Major Superiors of Women Religious, along with the Vatican, to really promote and support women religious who see themselves as an expression of the magisterium of the Church in the way that they live out their vows. One of their stated purposes, Anne, is to promote unity among major superiors of women religious, thus testifying to their union with the magisterium and their love for Christ's vicar on earth, and to coordinate active cooperation with the USCCB. To me, this seems to be right at the heartbeat of a very positive expression of women religious.
Oh, absolutely. And the orders that do belong to the council tend to be the orders that are the most successful in attracting new vocations. And I suppose that's not surprising because they the membership of the Council of Major Superiors, the member communities, they live together in community rather than, you know, by themselves in apartments like a lot of the LCWR sisters. They celebrate daily Eucharist and they do the divine office together. They wear a religious habit, they work in a common apostolate, and they are very explicit about their fidelity to the Church and the magisterium.
What do they mean when they say they want to be in union with the magisterium of the Church? Why is that important? For the average Catholic who may not even really understand what that term fully means.
It means that they embrace the teachings of the Church and they accept the authority of the bishops as our teachers and the authority of the Holy Father. Whereas many of the sisters that are in dissent, you know, are always challenging the authority of the bishops and the Holy Father. So these sisters want to show that they are firmly, in the apostolic exhortation Vita Consecrata, Pope John Paul II said that religious were at the heart of the Church. And I think these religious feel that to be at the heart of the Church, they accept Catholic doctrine and they accept the authority and embrace the teachings of the magisterium.
And I think when you say they accept it, I think you could add actively and joyfully.
Oh, absolutely. And I think that's one of the things that attracts the vocations. Who wants to join a group of people who are mad at the Church?
Who are mad at the Church and just, you know, generally mad.
Exactly.
Well, and we're grateful to have you with us today to help us understand this entire situation from both the challenging side and the positive side, all within the redemptive light and work of Christ, which is what we do here at EWTN and the National Catholic Register. If anyone wants to find out more about the Council of Major Superiors of Women Religious, they can go to cmswr.org. That's cmswr.org. They're a wonderful organization worthy of your support and encouragement. And thanks again for being with us here today on Register Radio.
You're welcome. It's my pleasure.
And don't forget, for more information on these and other major stories, you always want to check in with EWTN and with the National Catholic Register. The Register's website is ncregister.com. Thank you again for joining us on Register Radio. For all of us at the Register and here at EWTN, I'm Tom Price. See you next week.
For more information about the National Catholic Register and about Register Radio, go to ncregister.com. Podcasts of Register Radio are posted on ncregister.com and on ewtn.com. Join us next week at this time for Register Radio on the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.
It's very easy because EWTN does all the hard work. You just let others know. Tune in, and they can see for themselves what a beautiful gift our church is.
In Mark 16, verse 15, Jesus commanded us to go into the whole world and proclaim the good news to all creation. Those words are the heart of the call of the EWTN media missionaries, volunteers who help create awareness of EWTN in parishes and communities across the United States.
Through EWTN, I've grown in my faith. I can point others to certain programs that provide them with the resources they need to understand their faith.
If you consider what Jesus did for us on the cross, it's a small way to give back to Him.
With as little as 10 minutes a month, you can help spread the word. Call today 1-205-795-5771 or log on to our website, EWTNmissionaries.com, and find out how easy it is to be an EWTN media missionary.
I might have gone to church, you know, at Christmas time, gradually quit going. It's not as scary as I thought it was. It's a much more warm and open place, and God really is about love. It's not about the rules and the things that I remember as a young child. It really is about the love that God has for each one of us that's so deep and wonderful.
If you've been away from the Catholic Church for any reason, visit CatholicsComeHome.org.